From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of March 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet with Eric Snodgrass. He's from Agrible, and we'll do all of that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium for this Friday afternoon. We are now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Quite a week we've had so far, Mike.
It has been one of those weeks, Todd, where you really need a good hedge plan. That's all there is to it.
I think that's really true. So let's start with USDA numbers. We get all kinds of things out of Washington, D.C. these days. Usually not the reports, but this afternoon there was a report for the cattle on feed. What did it show?
Well, it showed heavy supplies still, and you know, it's very strong indications that our demand for corn is really staying extremely, if not historically high. And I'm wondering whether the on storage numbers, the cold, not the cold storage, but the grain stocks number next week may actually give us some actual indications that not only are we pumping up the exports, we're pumping up the ethanol demand and the industrial side, but on feed numbers at 109% March 1, 11.71 million head. That's at the very top of the trade estimates. Placements in February, 107%. That's about 1.5% below the highest trade guess. And so you've got a situation where the feed demand is also, I would say, near historic, if not historic. Marketings came in very strong to help offset some of that negativity at the very top end of the range of 102%. So I would say continuation of buying fat cattle and selling feeder cattle may be in the works next week. We still have to, however, work through the fact that China did go ahead and not only put in live pigs, but they also put in pork in terms of their one of their 128 items for retaliatory tariffs. So this allowed the pork to go down and the hogs to go down almost 11% this week, pulling the fat cattle with it.
Yeah, so if was that the reason the cattle were down today? I mean, you can look at that and say, well, hogs were down 290, so but and understand that, but the cattle followed just on the livestock side because of the hogs tumbling lower?
Yeah, I think so, and I think they also have gotten used to, in the futures market, waiting for the USDA report to buy because they've had several months now where it's been bigger placements or on feed, and they had tried to buy it before the report and gotten their clocks clean. So I would look for some short covering, especially with the way the meal reacted today in the second half of the day. But I, again, would say to you that the fat cattle, I think right now June fat cattle should be closer to $110 to give you an idea of where I think we should be at based upon supply-demand fundamental and the fact that the cash market is about $7, $8 above the futures in April. So that's kind of what I'm looking at, but I have to wait for the hogs to find a low before I can really get excited about fat cattle and getting along there.
Just for some clarification, the Chinese did release a list of 128 items. Pork was among those that they will be putting either a 25 or a 10% tariff on incoming. That in response not to yesterday's announcement by President Trump, but the earlier announcement of tariffs on steel and aluminum. So there could, I suppose, and most likely would be more yet to come. And this wasn't really that much. I think, what, $3 billion in total trade? A lot of the ag products were, nuts and oil seeds, or nuts and the pork, but so walnuts and almonds and other sorts of things, maybe some fruits and vegetables as well. What do you think we can see in the future?
It was a measured response, and I think this is where we don't have an answer to the question of what we dealt with on Commodity Week a couple weeks back as far as whether the Chinese have been buying soybeans ahead in anticipation of canceling them if President Trump followed through with these tariffs. I will say, though, last week when we spoke, we talked about losing the wheat and we not being able to lose the meal. If we did, we would have a lot of significant issues to contend with. You notice the meal was actually able to close back up strongly today for the week. It did close higher also. And so we got the meal underneath us, and we got the Federal Reserve underneath us with the dollar weaker, and with the five-year bond yields after making a fresh eight-year high earlier this week. Looks like it's going to settle down lower on the week and maybe have an outside week and maybe even take out the monthly lows. So I think you have some supportive features in the outside markets to help us. But I think you've got to think about the beans on rallies, especially given the weather and given some of these acreage estimates that are probably going to become more of a reality. And what I mean by that, Todd, is the hard red wheat belt weather looks drier. That puts you into more beans or oil seeds. The Delta Corn Belt weather looks extremely wet based upon the private forecast that forecasters I work with. That suggests that cotton and corn acres are not going to go in very easily in Mississippi, Louisiana, Tennessee, Arkansas, and those states. So I think the idea of bigger bean acres, smaller corn acres, is very much a reality at this point going into next week's report, regardless of what USDA says. So rallies, I think you really do need to hedge probably a little bit more aggressively in the soybeans. And I hate to say kind of tune out what's going on with the tariffs and things like that because we can't, but there's a lot of other good reasons to get hedged in the soy complex and then decide whether you needed to defend it later down the road. I'd say one last thing, and then I'll stop bloviating, but we've got two major private analysts out there now suggesting 40 million tons for an Argentine bean production number. That's probably the bottom of the barrel, if you ask me. So we're trading a very low number now. And I think that's now priced into the futures, or especially the meal futures after today.
Yeah, so we have prospective plantings out next week on Thursday at 11 o'clock. The Trump administration's announcement yesterday, I think, has 60 days, if
that's right.
I remember correctly. So we won't know for a long time on that one. So really, it's all about next week, and we could find a way, I suppose, to tumble. And we've been calling, or many analysts, including yourself, have been calling on producers to make sure they're got themselves set at least on the soybeans and some upfront sales for new crop, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. I did another 10% of insured bushels earlier this week, and we got back above 1025 today, and any catch-up selling that didn't get done needed to get done, in my view. I think this is the other thing. As you get above 1045, you get back to $10 cash beans. While that may not be the top, I will go back to what you and I have talked about all year long. If we go higher than the 1045 level or that 1040 level, it's been such long-term resistance. I've got to think the wheat and the corn are pulling the beans higher at that point. That's quite frankly what we need. And there is a gap on the upside in the hard red wheat above this market, substantially above this market after this week's trade. And if we can get up to that gap and fill it, and we've got December corn trading up around 420, 425, it's a great place to start, I think, on the new crop corn as well. So a lot of work to be done here in the next week if we can get the prices we need.
Anything before I let you go for the day?
I think that'll do it. You have a great weekend, sir.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's turn now to the agricultural news for the day. Earlier in the day, President Donald Trump signed the omnibus bill. That after threatening to veto it earlier in the day. The bill did include the Section 199A fix, and it is retroactive to the beginning of the year. Elsewhere, the president is also calling for a three-year extension of Trade Promotion Authority, otherwise known as TPA. He says that'll help him to expedite approval of trade details. We have more from Rod Bain at the USDA.
We fully understand that times are tough in farm country and for our agribusinesses.
That's the new chief ag negotiator for the U.S. Trade Representative's Office, Greg Dowd.
I look forward to going to bat on behalf of U.S. agriculture to make progress on the multitude of challenges in the trade arena that we have in front of us.
Speaking at the recent AgriPulse Ag and Food Summit just a week after being sworn into office, Dowd discussed President Trump's recent request for extension of Trade Promotion Authority.
To seek an extension until 2021 and aggressively use that authority to negotiate a revised trade agreements so they are fair, balanced, and support American prosperity.
Dowd says fast-track authority will be a key tool in the Trump administration's efforts to improve trade deals and opportunities for the ag sector through means such as
building coalitions with other countries to support sound regulatory policies for new technologies, and in some cases, not regulating these new technologies if that is appropriate.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
One more story from Washington, D.C., this one on ethanol, as the discussion rolls on regarding the renewable fuel standard between the ag and oil industries. The head of the Environmental Protection Agency says officials are working to find a solution that works for both agriculture and refiners. The oil sector is seeking reforms for RINs, or renewable identification numbers, that would hamper ethanol and corn demand, according to agriculture groups. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt has his take.
Our goal is to provide clarity on the RVP side, be able to sell ethanol 12 months a year, RVP 15, as you know, and then also providing RIN relief with respect to the trading platform and the cost and inflationary aspects of that so that we can see success in both sectors.
Meetings at the White House were an ongoing theme in the talk so far this year. However, the Trump administration most recently signaled it may leave any possible RFS reform to lawmakers. Trump has indicated previously he would support capping RIN prices while also allowing for year-round E15 sales across the nation. Pruitt says the administration remains committed to finding a solution.
The president is committed to farmers and ranchers, but he also doesn't want to see refineries shut down. And both are important. And we shouldn't use this statute or this issue to put sectors of our economy in competition with one another. We should try to put an answer on the table that blesses both. And that's what we're endeavoring to do.
That's EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, and a look at the agricultural news for the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Friday afternoon. Eric Snodgrass is now here from Agrible to discuss the weather forecast. Usually we start with the growing regions, but we probably should start with a snowstorm that's making its way across the Corn Belt or just about to develop. This is a big one for the weekend. What can you tell me?
Well, you know what? I was just in Aberdeen, and I went through parts of Minnesota, Iowa, and northern half of Illinois. And I'll tell you something. There's no snow on the ground in those areas. So This is kind of unusual for this time of year. Not too unusual, but they're going to be getting dumped on. We've got this great little low-pressure system that's going to come right out of the Rocky Mountains, go straight over toward kind of Iowa, Missouri, Illinois area. And on the northern side of that, there's going to be what we call a deformation zone. This is a kind of a fun little meteorological term, but we're going to have this tight temperature gradient that's going to stretch from North Dakota through Minnesota, through northeastern Iowa, through Illinois and Indiana. And right along that front, there's going to be a band in there of 6+ inches of very wet snow, very heavy snow. And it's going to be really tricky to forecast. I'll tell you, I've been working closely with Andrew Pritchard, who also works with me at Agrible. And I'll tell you, to be able to pinpoint that heavy snow band, it is going to be one of those things where we're only going to be able to nail it down about 6 hours in advance. And it could be something where the southern half of the county of Champaign maybe gets nothing, just 34 degrees in rain, and the northern half, I'm not kidding you, could get 6 inches of snow. So it's going to be one of those real tight bands we're going to have to keep a very close eye on. So it's a lot of fun to forecast, but it's also quite challenging. But yeah, that's going to be the big weekend story, and that gets going late tonight, and it lasts through tomorrow morning. So we're going to have to watch this one carefully, but it's going to be bringing some moisture to some locations that actually kind of need a little bit of moisture right now. So, yeah, that'll be the tricky one. Real big travel problems this time of year.
Speaking of moisture, Arkansas, places in the Delta region have been getting an awful lot of it. Are they going to get more?
Oh, a lot more. We've got system after system lined up for the next 10 days that is absolutely going to hammer eastern Texas, eastern Oklahoma, straight through Arkansas, Mississippi. Tennessee is going to get hammered, and so is Kentucky. And why this matters, you know, to ag is this is the part of the country that is trying to get those planters rolling, get everything in the fields, and they're just getting drowned out. I mean, some of the model projections on precipitation have an additional 6 to 9 inches of rain, not snow, 6 to 9 inches of rain through the next 10 days. But here's what's interesting. You know, a couple of days ago, we had 4 model runs in a row coming from the U.S. model, the GFS, that wanted to bring about next Thursday, so about 7 days from now, wanted to bring a system through parts of the panhandles of Oklahoma and Texas. And I was talking about saying, okay, we're not confident just yet in this, but we need to keep watching. Well, the last 6 model runs have all put a big giant donut hole right over that same area. So the drought that's right now in Texas and Oklahoma, parts of Kansas, where, you know, we're really starting to watch winter wheat, you know, it's starting to, going toward, you know, this is an important time. Well, we've got issues right there right now with just things being, just way too dry. And the longer range forecasts just keep it dry, at least for the next 10 days. So you're right. To our south, we have a completely split up pattern where it's really, really wet, really, really dry.
Delta then too wet to plant. The hard red winter wheat in the southwest suffering when will continue. It looks like it's going to be cold in parts of the Midwest, and I assume maybe the spring wheat growing regions too?
Yeah, you know, I was, like I said, I was in Aberdeen. I was talking to some bankers from Fargo, and they are this year actually planning. They're already hearing a lot of word and seeing a lot of signs that they're actually planning on having a bigger, number of prevent plant acres this year. So this is going to be an issue in the northern growing region. So really think here, northern South Dakota and North Dakota. Basically, the colder March through May is in that area, the bigger the prevent plant acres. And we care about this because the rate at which we have seen an increase in planted acres of corn and soybeans in the Dakotas is practically exponential since 2000. And so we have got to keep a close eye on them, because that would be, you know, I hate to say it, but it'd be good for the rest of the Corn Belt if they don't get a crop in, because that's a pretty significant reduction in acreage. And unfortunately, that cold pattern at least hangs on through the next 10 days. We will get a brief warm up midweek this upcoming week around, around Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. But the cold air is loaded into the Northwest, and it is just keeping this Northwest flow just keeps us cool. They also just released the long range model from the European model. It gets us out the next 32 days. And because of the really cold pattern we try to settle into for the next 10 to 15, it dominates the long term forecast, making April look cooler than average. And I know a lot of people don't want to hear that. We're itching to get in fields around here. I saw some planters already rolling. It's kind of crazy, but this is not a good forecast for warming up those soil temps.
I'm told in South America, the rainfall last weekend in Argentina didn't do a lot of good. Do they still have rainfall in their forecast for this week?
You know, that's interesting. So they had three rainfall events that went through, but it was one of those things where when you stopped and actually looked at the amounts, Cordoba and Buenos Aires, you know, it was widespread, scattered stuff. It wasn't the nice soaking rain that they would desperately need for their crop. And so what's happening here is that at this point, the earliest planted corn and soybeans in that area, they're kind of past the point of no return. The later planted stuff, they have a really long planting window in Argentina. The later planted stuff could benefit from any precip coming, but here's a long range forecast next 10 days. Keeps Cordoba, Buenos Aires provinces, both of them dry. Keeps parts of Uruguay, northern Argentina, southern Brazil very, very wet. In fact, the forecast for Mato Grosso up in Brazil is wet over the next 10 days as well. So that's going to be significant to watch, because we're still trying to finish up harvest of the first crop soybeans, and also trying to get the safrinha crop down. So a little bit of weather problems, but nothing that's really going to be substantially different from what we've been talking about for the last few months.
For the marketplace, we like to call it risk premium. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Yep, thank you.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agrible.